Trista Crick checks in. Trista, really appreciate your time. How's life back there in D.C.?
Oh, well, today there is the congressional baseball game. So it's madness right now. You have grown men dressed up in full baseball uniforms with the names of senators and congressmen on the back.
Trista, we are all big kids at heart. I don't even think that's a doubt at this point. But there really is nowhere else to start. The heartbreaking news about the passing of Jerry West. We all know the legendary accomplishments. I mean, I'm old enough to where I saw him play at Madison Square Garden many times. But my goodness, you posted a wonderful photo with him. What could you tell us about your friendship and just the kind of person he was?
I met Jerry almost a decade ago while covering the NBA, and we actually share a birthday. And so I was sitting next to him on the baseline of the court, Thomas and Mack in Las Vegas. And I asked him, I said, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" And I had never met him before. And I said, "You know, you're the greatest talent evaluator of all time. How do you know? Like, how do you know when someone's mediocre versus great versus all-time good?" And he lit up and went into a 25-minute discussion with me about intuition and using your gut and seeing it in someone's eyes. And he was so generous with me. We became friends after that, texted, called, saw him at events, and he was just so funny. I think the thing that people don't realize about him is that he has some of the most cutting, savage humor as it relates to the NBA and just the game in general, and he wouldn't hold back. He would say exactly what he thought about any player, and at 80-something years old, you could ask him about a role player like, I don't know, Nemeas Keita, who has, you know, been bouncing around the league, played for the Celtics, played for the Kings, and you're like, "Hey, he looks pretty good. Tell me about him." And he could give you the kid's life story. And at 80-something years old, he knew that about everyone, and he was so playful. He was going through some health issues last year at Summer League when I saw him, but that didn't stop us from, you know, shoulder bumping each other in the hallway and pretending to play fight. And he saw one of my good friends. He's like, "You know her? This is your friend?" He's like, "Yes, one of my best friends." He goes, "Oh, you gotta let her go. You gotta give this friendship up. She's bad news." So it's been a sad day because every time I talked to him, I felt like I learned a lifetime of lessons about the game. And I actually interviewed him for 2 hours two summer leagues ago. So if you didn't catch that, go to the Heat Check podcast and listen to it and find it, because not only did he give you lessons about how to build a roster and build a team and his time in the league and, you know, historical moments and what he thought about the next upcoming class of rookies, but he shared a lot about life and how to live life the right way. And everybody that he touched, it has very similar stories.
You know, when I saw that picture and I learned that you were friends, you know what passed through my mind? If you were an art lover, you'd love to have been able to talk with, like, Rembrandt. If you loved acting, maybe Meryl Streep. And I was like, as a basketball nut, Trista got to talk to Jerry West. I mean, you really, to put that in proper terms, I mean, who else would you aspire to talk to basketball about, like, in the history of ever?
Ever, and you knew it when you were in his presence too. It was one of those people that you talk to where you try to remember every word they say, and you try to remember every moment that you're with them, because you know what you're soaking up and who you're soaking it up from. And I'm just grateful that I could consider him a friend, and that he gave me a lot of personal and professional advice. He believed in me, and at times where my career wasn't where it is now, you know, he instilled a lot of words of wisdom in me and said, "Listen, I've studied great men and great women, and I can obviously tell them when I see them, and you're one of those people."
Wow. I appreciate you sharing that, Trista. But as a first-time guest, I want to share some background. So you're a native of the 503. So kind of let our folks know where you're from. And maybe, you know, whether you came from a family of fans, kind of paint us a picture of how Trista became such a sports fanatic that she pursued it as a way to earn a living.
Yeah, so when I was, between the time I was a baby and I was six, we were living in Northern California. We just had very limited access to cable or anything like that. We had a big satellite dish. But my mom was living, before we moved to Northern California, she was living in Portland. She got to experience the 1977 Trailblazers Championship. And that was very early on in her time as someone who lived in Portland from the Midwest. She grew up in Superior, Wisconsin. And so she became a rabid Portland Trailblazer fan and instilled that in me since I was probably four. So we would watch games together. We would try to go to games. Like, Clyde Drexler came down to Northern California, and we got to meet him at a mall, and he signed a cartoon of himself for me. And so I became a huge fan because of her. And my sister, both sisters were big basketball fans. My oldest sister was a huge Kevin Duckworth fan. My other sister was a big Terry Porter fan, and I was a Clyde Drexler fan. So we kind of had, you know, our favorite players. And throughout time, when we moved back to Portland, I would go to games. I went to Harriet Tubman Middle School. I sang in the choir. And the Blazers would come, actually, for pancakes and our choir singing to them. So I got to sing and meet some of the greats of all time. Remember, Scottie Pippen was on that team, and
yeah.
Steve Smith was on that team, and Steve Kerr was on that team. So, I became not just a fan of the game as a watcher, but I started playing from the time I was about six on an all boys team, and then ended up playing all through high school. So, yeah, you know, sports has been a way for us to connect as a family, but also as a way for me to get out competitive juices. So grew up in Portland from the time I was in first grade all the way through, and then got a full-ride caddy scholarship to Oregon, the Chick Evans Scholarship. So I was lucky enough to spend my time in Eugene debt-free, which is freaking awesome. I caddied over the summer. And then I fell in love with college football. I really didn't watch a ton until I got to college, and I remember it very, very vividly. The Reggie Bush somersault into our end zone. That was when I began to hate USC. That was when I said, "Huck the Fuskies." That was when, you know, after I graduated college, I went to that blackout game where Pete Carroll tried to storm the field. He was entering the field. We finally beat him. Had been many, many years. So I'm probably a bigger Duck fan than a Blazer fan now, just because I feel so connected to the city, so connected to the team, and obviously it's different when you go to a school versus you're a fan of a pro team.
And there's been a lot less torture being a Duck fan as compared to a Blazer fan.
Bilotti gave us a little.
Yeah, and you were there for the start of Chip Kelly calling the plays. So when you arrived, or actually your last 2 years, you started to see what we're building towards that exists right now. But another thing I wanted to ask you, with the demise of the Pac-12, which personally will piss me off for eternity, but the reality is the Ducks are off to the Big Ten. They've had two remarkable seasons with Bo Nix. So now with Dylan Gabriel, an offense that looks lethal. From your chair, you know, those you've spoken with, interviewed, kind of what's your level of stoked or optimism for this coming football season?
I don't think I've been this excited for a college football season as a Duck fan ever. I really don't. I mean, you're talking about the number one receiving core in all of college football. That's us. We did that in Eugene, Oregon. That's what Dan Lanning brought for us, right? You've got a running back core that's also elite. I think seventh. You've got the second best quarterback room. I mean, Dante last year at UCLA was threatening to leave the program if Chip Kelly didn't start him. And now he's okay to play behind Dylan Gabriel. That's like the kind of thing that's the kind of installation that Dan Lanning is giving to his players. The fact that Dan Lanning possibly could have gone to Alabama and turned it down is just as big as as a thing as Dan Hurley not leaving UConn. And so I'm excited about Dan. I'm excited about this receiving core, which is the best we've ever had in the history of our program, which we've had some good ones, right? Like, I remember as a fan, we had Darren Carrington and Byron Marshall and Braylon Addison. It feels like it's levels above that with Tez Johnson and Trayshawn Holden from Alabama. So I think that this is a team that we're going to see what they're made of October 12th. Right, we're going to see what it's like to go up against another elite program that's in the Big Ten and Ohio State beat Ohio State. And the last time I saw us play them, which was at the national championship, and those fans are about as annoying as they come, honestly. So I want revenge, and I want it at Autzen Stadium.
I love it. Talking with Trista Crick, host of MGM, BetMGM Tonight. You know, a quick thought on the WNBA. We know we're seeing these attendance numbers, TV ratings. I know you kind of changed your photo on your Twitter feed. And, of course, me being a New Yorker and a Eugenian, I love Sabrina. There's great new faces, the traditional studs, Aja and Stewie. How much are you loving the way the W is getting this kind of attention, which I want to say is long deserved, to see folks respond like this?
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing because as someone who really started talking about betting from a WNBA lens and the wobble, to see the way that my blog posts and my social media posts were received back then in 2020, to see the way that it is now, you know, you never hear anyone say in your comments, no one cares about this sport. We're not watching this sport. Stop telling us about this sport. And even 12, 16, 18 months ago, you were seeing that. And there's so much talent. Like you said, I've been a fan of Sabrina since she was at Oregon. I mean, I've been a fan of this Oregon team, period, even through the wobble, right? Like, we probably should have won a national championship that year if it wasn't for the pandemic. But, yeah, like, the way that even Cameron Brink, who, you know, she's a local stud as well, comes from the area, even though we hate the fact that she went to Stanford. It is what it is. And I think that she's a star. You've got a lot of star power in the WNBA. And I was just reading an article, actually, right before you called me, that, you know, attendance is up over 100%. Ratings are up like 400%. So all that's going to do is grow the interest of the game, give these ladies the due attention that they deserve, which will trickle down to them getting paid somewhat of a real professional wage.
I know you got a show coming up, but I've got two more questions I've got to ask for Trista Crick, because I've been betting, and I'm not saying this for effect, since I'm like in fifth grade. You know, I'm talking 1970. I've been talking about it. I've been doing this show for a quarter century. But to many, it's kind of new. So I'm curious, be it on your shows, tech, social media, do you hear from fans and listeners who might be new to it and ask you to explain, what does it mean to take the Mavs plus 185 or the Yankees minus 120?
Yeah, I think you get that for sure. And that's what I try to do a lot, is to meet people where they're at and try to explain things for people who are not, you know, regular bettors. Right. So you could just essentially say, OK, like, I bet the Mavs on the money line. That just means the Mavs to win. The Mavs happen to be underdogs. I think everybody kind of knows what underdog is now, since it's just such a normal colloquialism. How much of an underdog are they? Well, if I put $10 on the Mavs, I win $18 plus my original $10 back. So sometimes I'll explain it that way. And then you can explain it backwards when it relates to, okay, the bet is minus 200, which means that I have to bet $200 to win 100. So I think that's really important, and I want to see the Pacific Northwest and California also have legalized betting as well, because that's going to make it so much easier with the mobile side of things for people to really start to play around with this and learn what parlays are and, you know, learn what player props are. And I think fantasy football and fantasy basketball has exposed people to this as well. It's just the gateway drug. So for me, it's an awesome way to get excited about a game I may not be that excited about, but also to know more about the sport, because of the analysis that goes into to betting.
And the last thing I want to get to is one thing we know, there has been progress, but sports media, and, you know, you throw in gambling, it can be a tad misogynistic. I've got to know, how many cases have you run into of mansplaining, and when somebody's trying to explain it to you and you're like, hey, thanks, dude, but I got this?
Early on, I think a lot of people at my former employer were extremely deprecating to me in the betting space and tried their very hardest to keep me out. And when I gave a max unit bet out, which was, I remember exactly what it was Utah Jazz versus the Philadelphia 76ers. Ben Simmons, I think, put up 41 and had, I think, 0 points in the fourth quarter. And I put 9 units on the Jazz and said that online, and it became this meme. It became completely made fun of. Oh, okay, you put 9 units, da da da. But that was the culture of where I was. And now that I have a 4-hour betting show, 20 hours a week, and then hits all over the country, I've been able to build my own social media profile in that betting space. It's not nearly as bad at all. More so, it's people looking at me with a blank face that they don't know really what I'm talking about.
No, I had a feeling that there was going to be kind of a watershed moment. Trista, I could talk to you for hours. I know you're a little busy for the next 4.
Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Folks, she's Trista Crick. When our show ends, she and the crew will take over. She also does the Heat Check NBA podcast on Twitter. It's at Trista_Crick. Trista, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Be well. And as you mentioned, I really look forward to talking again down the road.
Same. Talk to you soon. Thanks again.
All right. Take it easy.